Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Welcome to the Inside Lacrosse Women's Podcast. I am Matt Kinnear. I'm joined by Hallie Quillinan, Inside Lacrosse Women's Editor. Hallie, we're here at the start of a new season. There's always a lot of positive energy around a new season. You got to watch kind of all the games around the country the first weekend. What were your general impressions of this start to 2017?
I thought it was an exciting start. I thought that there were some close games. I think that really what a lot of people were really excited to see this weekend was the possession clock. Was this 90-second clock, what's it going to look like? What is it going to kind of make teams do? I think we saw a lot of zone defenses, which I knew we were going to see heading into this season. We saw a lot of different zone defenses throughout the fall. I think we saw some different subbing techniques. So you're running a lot more players through the box. I think we saw a lot of close games because possession has been going both ways. We saw a lot of discipline out of teams, not forcing that shot with 3-4 seconds left, kind of tossing it to the corner, tossing it to the other team, and getting into 12-man rides, 11-man rides. I think a lot of teams are going to be throwing different rides at you just because you're rewarded that much more. One, slowing the ball down, but two, getting it back with that possession clock. So I think we saw a lot of different tactics of the possession clock and a lot of exciting action in the first weekend.
As you look to this entire season, what are the teams that you think the possession clock helps the most, the teams that are best going to be able to take advantage of it and really run with it?
I think it helps kind of a litany of different teams. One, it helps the track runners. It helps the North Carolinas, Floridas, and Marylands of the world, because they're so fast. 90 seconds, I think what a lot of teams realize this fall, 90 seconds is actually a lot of time. It's not forcing offense. It's giving you an opportunity to get the ball down the field, to get your offense set up. And those three teams in particular, they get the ball down the field a lot faster than most other teams just because of the athletes that they attract in the recruiting process. And all of them have such depth and balance and speed offensively. They all have that quarterbacking player. They all have those players that can go 1v1. Their offensive schematics complement each other so well to a fast-paced offense. I think it starts defensively. They all have incredible athletic back lines that can pick up ground balls, transition them upfield, spark a quick offense. I think those three teams will be looking at see some of these teams and some of these players in our upcoming issue in March. But I think those three teams off the bat, offensively and through the midfield, really jump out. But then you have your players, their teams, rather, that have made zone defenses their bread and butter. You saw two of them clash this weekend in Stony Brook and Towson. Those are the number two and number four scoring defenses a season ago. And what they've been able to do defensively in the last few years has set them apart. So I think you have to look at the teams like North Carolina, like Maryland, but then you have to look at the teams that have mastered zone defense, which I think Towson and Stony Brook are two good examples. That will only set them apart this year. And then you look at the teams like Syracuse. You look at the teams like Notre Dame, Northwestern, coaches that always seem to have something up their sleeve. I think a lot of question marks kind of surround Syracuse as a whole this year because it's the post-Kayla Traynor era, and what she did offensively was almost overshadowed last year what she did on the draw. I think any team that has a successful draw specialist this year, which they're trying to create with Morgan Widener, a freshman up in Syracuse, is going to be light years ahead of their competition with the possession clock. But I think those are teams right now that kind of have an edge heading into the season.
Possession clock, one of the big changes for this season. This, what we're doing right here, is a big change. The new IL Women podcast. Hallie, are you pumped to podcast this season?
I am pumped to podcast. I can't wait to get it done. you and I will have some guests here and there. I know Ashley McCullough, a former IL staffer, is excited to get involved. Terry Foy, Zach Babbo have given some interest. So if you guys are listening, if you want to hear from anyone in particular about anything in particular, let Matt and I know on Twitter, and we'll do our best to deliver week after week.
Excellent. And this week certainly delivered for Northwestern in particular. You know, I don't think there's any team that had a better week, getting two good wins. I think the win against Canisius, people are going to look at the score and wonder why it's so close, but it's a better win than people, you know, maybe think on paper. Just, can you sum up Northwestern's week for us?
Yeah, you know, I think that what you said right there is so true. Canisius is a team that has dominated its conference year after year. I think this is one of their strongest teams that they've had in a long time. Erica Evans in their midfield, she's a bona fide star. She's a preseason All-American this year, and she was one of the major pieces to Coach Teeter, who is the Canisius head coach, winning gold with the under-19 Canadian team. Evans is also a member of the senior roster headed to England this summer. But unfortunately for Teeter and Evans, so are Selena Lasota, Nadina Straup, and Megan Kinna. And certainly no stranger to Team Canada. Northwestern came out and did what Northwestern does. I think that in close games, a lot of teams that haven't been there before get nervous. And I think Canisius really couldn't match Northwestern's ability to make those plays at the end of the game to secure this win. But really the main point you can make about this, 17-1 in the draw control game in Northwestern's favor. Salida Lasota had 8-2 herself. That wins the game right there, the amount of possessions that Northwestern was able to get. So what really impresses me is that this was a two-goal game. Northwestern getting 17-1 in draws and only winning 9-7, that tells me a lot more about Canisius, their defense, their grit, their willingness to compete than Northwestern here.
I don't know what to say about Northwestern. People have been a little bit down on them, but they're still Northwestern. What do you say is their ceiling for this this season?
You know, it's funny. They're still Northwestern, and they are still Northwestern because of Kelly Monty Hiller. She's one of the best coaches this game has ever seen. She always has her team ready to play. I think the last couple years, what you've seen with Northwestern is a young team. Well, those young players are experienced. They're veterans now. They're upperclassmen. I don't know if there are many better players in the country than Selena Lasota. I know she was a preseason third-team All-American. That kind of attributing to the shaky spring that she had last year, but she was the National Rookie of the Year as a freshman, and she has been drawing the opposition's top defensive player since her freshman year. She was outstanding against Canisius and Notre Dame in two very different ways. Against Canisius, she got 8 draw controls, and she single-handedly dominated that facet of Northwestern's game. Against Notre Dame, she showed that she's back. She was Northwestern's leader on offense. She had 4 goals and assists. She picked up key ground balls, key caused turnovers, had 4 draws herself, and a huge draw control at the end of the game when it was tied and when they really needed to hold off Notre Dame.
This is something we didn't discuss in the pre-show, so I'm putting you on the spot a little bit here. But talk about all these Canadians. Is this Canada's best shot at the World Cup this summer?
Absolutely. I think that the youth invasion that Canada has seen, these girls coming in from British Columbia, all 3 of these girls on Northwestern's roster, then you have players like Lydia Sutton at USC, Erica Evans at Canisius. I think that this is a really exciting time for Canada lacrosse. Canada, when I was growing up in the U.S. system and when I was playing, it was really, U.S. Australia. Canada had recently, in the last World Cup, solidified themselves as U.S.'s biggest competition. And then in the under-19 games, they beat the U.S. at their own game. Every single time Canada played Team USA in under-19 prep, in pool play, they got a little bit closer. And then that championship game, it was just the perfect storm. A lot of these young players on that team have U.S. college experience. And I like the vets, too. You know, you have Dana Dobie, Christy Foote, Kaylin Morissette from Louisville. I think that this is probably Canada's best shot. But just as you see the young players impressing for Canada, you also have Marie McCool, Gussie Johns, Taylor Cummings, Kayla Traynor on the U.S. roster. So as strong as Canada is, the U.S. team is pretty well equipped themselves.
Back to NCAA lacrosse, we had Stony Brook take on Towson, which was probably the most hyped game going into the weekend. Stony Brook getting a lot of preseason publicity, well-deserved preseason publicity from us and from other outlets, too. What did you take away from this game? Obviously, Stony Brook had to kind of come back and win at the end there. Kylie Allmiller with kind of the game-winning goal late. Stony Brook 10, Towson 9. What's your takeaway?
Heading into this game, I think you knew it was going to be a dogfight. One thing we're going to touch on in our March issue with both of these teams is what they're able to do defensively, kind of as I mentioned above. Two of the top defensive minds in this game lead these defenses, and I think you knew it was going to be a close game. You knew these defenses were going to bunker down. I think this score tells a lot more of Towson's story than Stony Brook. We know Stony Brook's story. We've told Stony Brook's story. Pick up our February issue if you aren't familiar with it. But I think Towson is a major contender this year. One, because certainly what their defense can do. But two, I think they have a stronger midfield and offense than they've had in years past. I think Mel Tabano is, she's an All-American midfielder. She is now an upperclassman. I liked her support with Gillingham, and then you have Carly Telecamp back from an ACL tear. Any zone defense buster is going to be every person on an offense picking up the slack. And you saw the scoring really shared amongst both of these teams. No one player had a breakout, 4 or 5 goal game. Everyone chipped in their 1 or 2 goals that they could to keep the defense honest. And ultimately, Kylie Allmiller made a play to put this game away. I think what's really exciting is when you see a player like Allmiller or Murphy or Maltabano deliver when they need to deliver. And that was cool to watch Kylie Allmiller kind of pick up this team, put it on her shoulders, put the goal in the back of the net. Mentioning back to that Northwestern-Notre Dame game, it's the type of play that you want to see a Courtney Fortunato make, which I was surprised that the ball wasn't in her stick at the end of the game. They were the plays that Taylor Cummings and Kayla Traynor kind of built a career on. So it's nice to see Allmiller kind of taking on that leadership role and saying, we're going to win this game and I'm going to put the ball in the back of the net.
That Stony Brook feature that you alluded to in the February issue, the headline mirror opposites Stony Brook and USC, how two programs have kind of gotten to the pinnacle of the sport, both teams that are going to be contending to make championship weekend this year, but they've both done it in very different ways. What was kind of the biggest thing you learned about Stony Brook in reporting that story?
I think the biggest thing that you've learned about Stony Brook is they really embrace a challenge. Joe Spallina is definitely one of the more outspoken vocal coaches, and you have to appreciate it because he's doing it to support his team, to support his players, to get their story and their message out there. I think they've really felt like they deserve some respect, and by now they've certainly got it. They're a top 5 team heading into this year. They were, a top team last year, 1 goal away from a quarterfinal appearance. I think that this year's Stony Brook team is probably the best team that he's had there. You have Van Dyke and Murphy and Yavoli as seniors. Allmiller's junior year is probably her best shot of winning a national championship because of the talent around her. And, you got to see actually with her. She's a fun personality too. I think the 57 questions, I'm really excited about that series, and she was kind of the perfect one to kick it off with.
Yeah, it really was a joy being a part of that, doing the 57 questions with Kylie Ohlmiller. You know, a little bit about that photo shoot. We went up to Stony Brook on a weekday. We shot Brown men's player Dylan Malloy at Stony Brook's gym, and we also shot Ohlmiller for that and Murphy for that cover. Ohlmiller, kind of on the spot, we did that 57 questions with her. We didn't prep her at all. We didn't prep the sports information director. We just kind of went with it and did it on the fly, and she was so great. You could see her personality. She's going to be one of those players that, obviously, on the field, she has some flashy highlight reel goals, and it's only matched by her personality off the field. She's going to be one of those people who, after college, is going to have a really good career in this industry if she chooses to stay in lacrosse. She's got that mix of a flash, success, personality that's just great to kind of stay relevant in this industry. Moving on to the defending champs, North Carolina. The title defense started this weekend, and it was a high-scoring, close game against James Madison. Hallie, were you surprised with this final score?
You know, not really. I think a lot of people, you know, I was watching the game, or wishing I was watching the game. Unfortunately, obviously, with everything that was going on down there, they had to move the game to a local high school. It was not streamed. It was definitely one of those games you wish were, but I was watching kind of the Twitter universe go back and forth about this game, and a lot of people were very surprised. You know, are the reigning national champions going to lose their season opener? This game was certainly close, but if you look at the last 2 years, North Carolina has opened its season against JMU, and it's been close. In 2015, it was 13-9. In 2016, it was 11-7. This game was surprising in that JMU led for most of this game. But I think, you know, a lot like Northwestern versus Canisius, this game was also won on the draw circle. UNC led the draw battle 22-10. Sammy Jo Tracy had 13 to herself. She's the nation's top draw specialist this year. You know, I think Kayla Traynor was that last year. She broke the single season record with NCAA draws. Could Sammy Jo Tracy turn around and break Kayla's record? It's certainly a distinct possibility. You know, Sammy Jo Tracy was kind of, in my opinion, the unsung hero of the national championship game. She dominated Taylor Cummings and Maryland on the draw circle, continuing into this year very strong. You know, was she the player of the week versus Marie McCool? That's another thing. I mean, Marie McCool was just unstoppable. Sammy Jo Tracy was getting her team's possessions. Marie McCool had 8 points in her offensive debut of the season, 6 goals and 2 assists, picked up a ground ball, had 5 draws to herself, caused 3 turnovers. I think she definitely gets my edge for player of the week. She's my early to Wharton favorite this spring. I think her game gone to an entirely new level in the offseason with her time with Team USA, most recently making that 18-player cut for the World Games. And she's taken her game to an entirely new level versus last year. And last year, she was a first-team All-American. So I think that both of those two players were huge for North Carolina in this game, a very close game. It was nice to see Maggie Bill back on the field. She had a hat trick. But for JMU, I loved this team's offensive balance. Kristen Gaudian and Margaret Tucker-Fogarty had 4 goals each, but balance of Hannah Havitt and Katie Kerrigan and Haley Warden. You know, last year, the CAA was JMU versus Towson. JMU versus Towson, you know, who is going to win that CAA championship? This year, I think what we've seen out of both teams in week one, Towson and JMU, that's going to be the battle in that conference again. I'm excited to watch those two teams go head-to-head. But I think North Carolina came out strong. You know, I don't think the lacrosse world should be on watch. I think the reigning national champ is still number one. I think that people should just keep a closer look at JMU and what they can do in 2017.
Another team that's highly ranked, but when you say people should take a closer look at, it's got to be Penn State. They seem to somehow fly under the radar, despite the success that they've had. Coach Daugherty has kind of inched this team forward every year that she has been head coach, and, you know, obviously to last year's new heights. What did you see from them in this first game, and what do you expect from them for the rest of the year?
You know, starting with Albany, between graduation, Allie Jimerson transferring to Syracuse, and a few key players not with the Great Danes this game. I don't think this is the Albany team we're going to see, much less at the end of February than at the end of April. I think John Badalino always finds an answer with the personnel he's given to work with. But on the contrary, like you mentioned, I think this is the Penn State team we're going to see in February, March, April, and well into May. I love what Coach Doherty is able to do with her players year in and year out. This is a team that graduates Madison Sear, Jenna Muschietti, and Emmy Smith in goal, and they come out with a monster 20-9 win over an Albany team that was one goal shy of beating Stony Brook in their conference championship last year and punching a ticket to the NCAA tournament. Steph Lazo put on a clinic. She had 5 goals and 7 assists. Madison Carter with 6 goals, 1 assist, and 10 draw controls. That was a huge performance out of the sophomore. And then Katie O'Donnell, you know, quietly rounding out this three-headed monster offensively with 5 goals and an assist. I think what's so unique about this Penn State team, and something you'll see more in a close game versus, you know, the 20-9 outcome over the weekend, it's always a different player that's stepping up. It's always a different player that's having a good game. Yeah, you see Penn State with Chris Hogan. You know, a lot has been said about Penn State men's lacrosse and his recent success with the Patriots in the Super Bowl, and he's one of the many threats that Tom Brady could pass to. I almost look at this Penn State team and Missy Doherty's system akin to a Bill Belichick offensive system. You know, aside from, you know, your quarterback, your Tom Brady, which in this case, you know, it's kind of been Steph Lazo for Penn State the last few years. The targets, the players, the girls around her, it seems that all 7 players can score at any given time, and they do in any given game. And they graduate and they bring in new players and they still fit this system. And I think that Penn State in 2015, because of Maryland, because of Northwestern in the Big Ten, nobody really gave Penn State a fair shot, and they won the Big Ten championship. And then last year they make a run to the Final Four and everyone's surprised. That team won a Big Ten championship the year before. How can you be surprised? So I do. I think that Penn State has, you know, much like we said with Joe Spolina, you know, he thinks his team deserves respect. I think Penn State definitely deserves respect.
We have way too much Patriots love on these podcasts.
Give me a break. I live in Boston. The praise today.
Kyle Devitt and Dan Abern in their In the Crease podcast, recorded the day after the Super Bowl, I think compared the Maryland men's team to the New England Patriots. So there's going to be a lot of sports comparisons to this Patriots dynasty that unfortunately has been ruling the NFL for a decade now, much to the chagrin of people like me who are Ravens fans. But moving on, Katrina Dowd leading Oregon to a win, her first win as head coach. What do you see from Katrina Dowd in terms of what she can do with this Oregon program as the head coach?
You know, I think that just it's kind of twofold. You know, you look at Oregon and you think athletics. The amount that this university buys into its athletic program, you know, being a stone's throw away from Nike, being a Nike school, really Nike's flagship school, you know that with Oregon, with the Pac-12 coming to women's lacrosse, with Oregon being a major player in the Pac-12, they were going to bring on a coach that they felt could win a Pac-12 championship, that could get Oregon into the NCAA tournament, get them, quite frankly, where the rest of their athletic teams have been and always will be. And they made the right move with Katrina Dowd. I think what she's been able to do since being on the North Carolina sideline for, 3 years, she won 2 national championships as that team's offensive coordinator. Last year, I don't know if there was a more attractive hire than Katrina Dowd. And Oregon was able to not only bring Katrina Dowd on staff, but then she turns around, brings Becca Block to head up her defense, Michelle Tumalo to head up her offense, 2 players that she coached while she was at Syracuse, and both made that 18-player cut to go to the World Cup. You know, it's a staff that will bring different ideas. You know, you have some Kelly Amandi Hiller in there with what Katrina was able to learn at Northwestern, combine that with Reggie Thorpe and Gary at Syracuse, a little bit of Jenny Levy and Phil Barnes. So if the game's kind of masterminds offensively and defensively, these three are a student of, and putting in their own flair, I think it's only going to be a matter of time before Oregon is a major player in its conference, pushing for the NCAA tournament. You know, take one look at this box score. It's a Katrina Dowd offense through and through. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 different players scored at least a goal, 8 had at least a point. That's really what she was able to create at North Carolina, an offense where, you know, if you're going to throw your best defender on Julia Taylor, you have Mariah Gatti stepping up and putting one in the back of the net. She creates such balance offensively, so defenses really can't key in on that. All things said, it's one game in. A win over Michigan is huge, a win over a Big Ten team. It'll be nice to see what she's able to accomplish throughout the rest of the season. But I think that this season is just really scratching the surface of what she and her staff will be able to do down the road.
I remember after North Carolina's championship run, that was one of the first things you said to me after that was, wow, Katrina Dowd really has showed what she can do with an offense and how great she can be. And she's going to be an attractive hire for a head coach. And what do you know it? She's hired at Oregon just a little while later. So kudos to you for pinpointing that early.
I think I was with like the majority of the lacrosse world in saying that, but I'll take credit for it. Okay.
The Duke Blue Devils, 9-7. They have a really, really strong defense. They beat Drexel this past weekend. Your takeaway from a 2-goal win against Drexel?
My takeaway is question marks. Was this a matter of zone defense play? Was this a matter of, you know, the possession clock? I think Duke is a team where I want to see what Maddie Crutchfield can do as an upperclassman. I'd like to see what Olivia Jenner can do on the heels of a very strong freshman campaign. I think it's still too early to tell. It's the post-Kelsey Duryea era in Durham. So I was really interested to see who was going to get the start in goal for Duke. And that was Jamie Lockwood coming up 50% on the day, doing all that she could to keep that win. Is this more Duke? Is this more Drexel? Only time will tell. All I can tell was, you know, heading into this game, I thought it was going to be a lot more of a shootout than it ended up being. So I was a little bit surprised of a 9-7 relatively low scoring game. But you never know. It's the first weekend of lacrosse. I think kinks are still being worked out. Both teams are trying to kind of get players into the rotation and figure a few things out. I think my biggest takeaway from this game is almost just, you know, I want to see what Duke and Drexel do the next few weeks and see kind of where these teams are in 2017.
Yeah, looking at the box score, you see Drexel 16 of 26 on clears. So how much is that Duke's riding game? How much is that just early season sloppiness? And then Duke dominating the dribble controls, 13 to Drexel's 4. That's kind of something we've seen in a few games, just those lopsided draw control numbers. Kind of looking bigger picture here, you already mentioned McCool as kind of your front runner for player of the year. Besides her, who maybe is kind of in that class with her when you look at the season?
I think it's definitely, I think you look at Florida, you look at Maryland, you look at Syracuse, you look at the teams that have been major competitors against UNC. I don't know if of those teams, then you throw Penn State in the mix. I don't know if those teams have that go-to player yet. Maryland, I'm interested to see, you know, how does Zoe Stukenberg, how does Megan Whittle respond to the loss of Taylor Cummings? Who's going to be that go-to player? I think that Marie McCool is far and away that player kind of looking to take the next step in her game for North Carolina, really embracing that leadership role. I'm interested to see who does that for Florida, who does that for Maryland, who does that for Syracuse. I think Penn State, you kind of see Steph Lazo embracing that role. Northwestern, you see Selena Lasota. USC, I think it's Michaela Michaels' year. Stony Brook, you have that two-headed offensive monster, Kylie O'Miller, Courtney Murphy. What's exciting is all five Wharton finalists from last year graduated. So it's a brand new year for some brand new names. I think Marie McCool headlines that group, but there's about 10 to 12 different players right now who kind of scratching to get into that elite group right now.
Brand new, fresh start, kind of, that makes me think of rookies. And then when I think of freshmen and think of rookies, Savannah Buchanan, midfielder out of McDonough, it's always a pretty safe bet to kind of pick a McDonough player as kind of a rookie of the year watch type person. What do you see from Savannah?
You know, I think that she was remarkable against Northwestern. The thing about Savannah Buchanan, even Taylor Cummings when she got to Maryland, Olivia Jenner at Duke, these players come from McDonough. And I think that, you know, when you are a player that played a key role for your high school team throughout your career, and it's a high school team that has a target on its back and has, you know, the greatest streak in the sport of lacrosse and high school sports right now, you have to bring your best every game. I think that's one thing that she learned under Chris Robinson, who is, in my opinion, one of the greatest lacrosse coaches at any level, male or female, of all time. When you can play for a coach like that in high school, and when you play with the pressure of having to deliver every minute of every game, because so many people don't want to see your team succeed, and they'll bring their best game against you, so you have to show up with yours. When that player graduates high school and gets to college, it's hard to call them a freshman. I'm really interested to see what Savannah Buchanan's classmate, Brandy Griffin, does at Maryland. I think that because of the experience these players have in high school, they have a huge edge up on their classmates. And, I mean, you saw Savannah Buchanan going toe-to-toe on the line with players like Selena Lasota. She had 4 goals. She was Notre Dame's leading scorer. At the end of the game, they set up plays for Savannah Buchanan to score, and she did. Over Fortunato, which I was a little surprised about, but I think that with players like Savannah Buchanan continuing to flourish in her first year, that'll only bode well for players like Casey Pearsall, Nikki Ortega, Courtney Fortunato at Notre Dame, really giving their offense a little bit more depth. I think that far and away, week one, she was the best freshman I saw.
And she's someone who clearly knows how to win, basically spending her entire high school career doing that. Looking forward to this weekend, 5 questions for you heading into this weekend. And I'm going to start with kind of a softball, easy question. I think I know your answer here. What is the game of the week?
Oh, game of the week, Florida versus North Carolina. I think that this has been, it might even be the game of the month. I'm really excited to see what Florida can do, simply because the last time we saw this Florida team play, they almost beat the national team on a weekend where the national team had to bring their A game because it was the last weekend of cuts. I think Florida is another year stronger, another year wiser. A lot of those girls that were young last year on this team, the Pareca sisters, Lindsay Rombach, are a year older with a full year of experience under their belt. I love Haley Hicklin in goal for this team. I think Caroline Fitzgerald and Taylor Bresnahan. You have Anaya Flanagan, if she's coming back from injury. She did not play against Team USA. I think that defense is one of the strongest in the country. And what this team can do offensively and through the midfield, Molly Stevens, Sammy Burgess, Shayna Pareca, Lindsay Rondbeck. This might be the best Florida team we've seen since the Florida team with Kitty Cullen and Sam Farrell that made that Final Four run. And once again, this is one of North Carolina's best teams. To be the best, you know, if Florida wants to be in that number one spot, they have to beat the best in North Carolina this weekend. This will be a game you don't want to miss. And I'm excited to see what both of these teams can do. You know, we talked a lot about North Carolina, what they did in their season opener versus JMU. I'm excited to see what Florida can do in their season opener.
Syracuse is a team that was probably hit most by graduation than, you know, more than any other team in the country. Kayla Traynor is the obvious headliner there, but numerous players all throughout the lineup there. In spite of that, what is their ceiling this year, and what do you look for from them this weekend against BC?
You know, Kayla Traynor was huge. She's one of the best college players of all time. A player like that doesn't come through your system quite often. So, you know, when you look at what a Taylor Cummings, how do you replace her at Maryland? How do you replace Traynor at Syracuse? You don't replace them. You try to have a few different players do all of the things that she did. Starting on the draw control, Kayla had an NCAA single-season record in draws. They played in a lot of close one-goal games last year where she single-handedly won it because she had 10, 12, you know, 16 draws to herself in those games. So who's going to take her spot? Morgan Widener, actually a freshman out of Coppell, Texas, took the majority of their draws this fall. So she's a player that, you know, she's green, she's a freshman, but they will rely heavily on her on the draw circle. Allie Jimerson transferred in from Albany. She'll be playing offense. You know, last year this is a team that, yes, graduated Traynor, but graduated Hallie Majorana as well. So who is going to be this team's quarterback? Who is going to operate this offense? And when you look at Jimerson and preseason All-Americans Nicole Levy and Riley Donahue, this offense is in better shape than most other offenses in the country. But because they aren't where they were a year ago, they're, quote, rebuilding. So I think that people will be pleasantly surprised by this Syracuse offense. You have Taylor Gate coming in the midfield. And the defense, you know, I think they brought in Caitlin DeFleece in the offseason. At the time, she was the associate head coach at Stony Brook. She was the mastermind of Stony Brook's defense. So now you have her working with Reggie Thorpe in the possession clock era. I'm excited to see the defense that they have put together. You know, one thing, as a Syracuse alum, you always know that Gary and Reggie, they have something up their sleeve. They have a new game plan that they're trying to work in. So I'm just excited to see what that is this year.
Penn State versus Towson, question for you is, what can Penn State do against Towson's defense? And is Penn State a Final Four team in 2017?
You know, Penn State versus Towson is going to be really exciting to watch because they play such different games. You know, I think what will help Penn State in this instance, I think it helps Stony Brook against Towson. Penn State has so many threats offensively, and that's how you break a zone defense. You break it by skipping the ball, you know, finding that 2v1 quickly. They have a quarterback behind in Steph Lazo that can find those openings. And, you know, it's just going to be working together, sending one through, cutting behind them, trying to break the zone. I think Penn State is well-equipped offensively. And seeing what Towson does offensively against Penn State's defense. You know, Albany scored 9 goals. They scored in a lot of runs in that first half. But I was very impressed with Penn State's defense in the second half. So what can Towson throw at Penn State that they didn't see last weekend? You know, I think that so much was said about Penn State's offense last weekend. They put up 20 goals, rightfully so. But Penn State's this is a defense that almost beat North Carolina in a semifinal to get to a national championship. So I'm excited to see what Penn State's defense can do and how Towson can test them. You know, I think, is Penn State a Final Four team? I think that they're one of the 5 to 8 teams right now that are in that Final Four conversation. I think that they made a huge argument for themselves with a great first weekend. I'm leaning towards yes. I think they're one of my Final Four teams. At this time last year, they were one of my Final Four teams. And I think that it's going to be an exciting year in the Big Ten with Penn State, Maryland, and Northwestern probably playing on a little bit more of an even playing field than it's been in years past.
We'll stick into the Big Ten and look at Maryland. Maryland graduates arguably the greatest women's college lacrosse player of all time, arguably one of the greatest college lacrosse players all time, no matter what level or gender you're talking about, Taylor Cummings. With a graduation like that, what is this team going to look like?
I mean, Taylor Cummings, yes, absolutely. Probably the best college lacrosse player I mean, certainly in her generation, probably of all time. And you know who will say that is Jen Adams, who most people refer to as the greatest of all time. You know, and when you have a player like Jen Adams giving you that type of clout, that's saying something. You know, I think that Taylor Cummings, once again, like Trainer, I don't think Kathy Reese looks at this team and says, okay, next one up, which she was able to do when Katie Shortson graduated because Taylor Cummings was that player. But, you know, no one player will replace Taylor Cummings, but they have a lot of players that could. You know, one thing that Kathy Reese, Lauren Kennis, Caitlin Phipps, they're able to do is this Maryland team is so homegrown. They're able to annually keep the top players in Maryland in Maryland. This year they brought in the number one freshman class, Lizzie Colson, Hannah Warther, Brindy Griffin. I think you're going to see a lot of freshmen get key minutes this year. And then you look at players, you know, you graduate a first-team All-American defender, a first-team All-American midfielder, but you bring back three preseason first-team All-Americans in Megan Whittle, Zoe Stukenberg, and Nadine Hadnagy defensively. That's the Maryland way. They graduate All-Americans. They bring in All-Americans. They return All-Americans. You know, I think it really says something to the culture of a program and the powerhouse that that coaching staff has built, in that you lose Taylor Cummings and you are a national number two heading into the season the next year. That's just what Maryland does. I think that they're certainly back in the title hunt because they're always there.
It is remarkable what the Terps have done. And like you said, graduating a player like that and still being, you know, basically right there in the mix, right on top there, is just truly remarkable. Looking at this weekend, who's one of those kind of top teams that you would put on upset alert this Saturday and Sunday?
You know, upset alert, I have to go with Northwestern. You know, we've talked a lot about them today and all of the great things they've done, and taking nothing away from that, Colorado was one of my favorite teams last year. I thought that they were so close from breaking into the top 20. They played USC to its closest conference game. I love the way that Ann Elliott has really got this Colorado team to play in its infancy. I mean, they're a brand new team just like USC. And it only bodes well for the last year of the MPSF and how competitive it's going to be. And, of course, the future of the Pac-12. I think Colorado, much like USC, which both head coaches played under Kelly Monty Hiller at Northwestern, I think that they are going to continue to take teams by surprise until they get that one big win, which I think is coming this year, and two, kind of national respect in the polls. They had my vote last year numerous times in the media poll. I think that they're really knocking on the door, and they'll walk through the door in 2017.
Excellent, Hallie. First podcast in the books. What do you think?
I think this is pretty fun. Thanks so much for being the host of this podcast. And yeah, I mean, as we mentioned, if there's anything you want to hear us talking about, if there's anything in particular you want to touch base on, keep Matt and I aware. We're happy to be doing this year.
Definitely. We're looking forward to this all season, every week. Hallie, how can people follow the Scores and what's going on this weekend? What's your social media and social media for Scores and updates?
You know, first and foremost, Isle Women on Twitter, on Instagram. We're going to keep everyone updated throughout the weekend. Check out the epic Isle Women scoreboard. It'll be operating all weekend long. I will personally be operating it. That's where you're going to get all of your stats, your scores, your outcomes. Check out your game calendar. See where you can find these games being streamed. Follow our Twitter for that. Follow my Twitter. I am not as active on my Twitter, but I'm trying to be, as my fellow IL staffers at HR Quillenin. And really there, you know, just let me know what you want to read more about on our website, you want to hear more about on our podcast, and I'll do my best to deliver.
All right. Thanks, Hallie, for being here, and thanks for the readers for listening, and we will catch you all next week. Enjoy the games.
Inside Lacrosse Podcast.